Podcasting on the road. X-Men on the run.
On the run?
On the run.
All right.
Got a snow episode for you.
Ooh, a snowy, snowy episode. Welcome to the X-Wife Podcast. I'm Alicia.
And I'm Justin. Mountain edition.
Mountain edition.
We are vacationing this week, enjoying all the sights and sounds of New Hampshire with hikes in the frozen waterfalls, a snowmobile ride, and some snowboarding.
Yeah.
If you follow us on Instagram, you saw Alicia took a dip in that frozen river.
I did take a little dip. Yep.
Nice little exploration.
Just a small accident, but yeah, everything's fine.
It was a happy accident. It was a fun story. But what's been happening, let's talk about what we got going on today. What's...
Ooh, on the docket today, we got those Infinity comics, you know, and X-Men number 6 and Marauders number 27.
Yeah, we skipped X-Men 6 last week because it was all Inferno all the time.
All Inferno all the time.
And now with only one Marauders, it's a pretty good, you know, consolation.
Yeah, just a little bunch of goodness for you today.
Little couple of Jerrys.
Just a couple of Jerrys. Usually that's a bad thing, isn't it?
In Rick and Morty terms, yeah.
We're talking Rick and Morty here. A couple of Jerrys is not what you want.
There was also X-Men Heritage, which I hope to pick up when I'm back in town.
Yes.
Yeah, you got 27 for digital. But yeah, and X-Men Unlimited, but you don't read that. It was actually an interesting looking one. Maybe I'll tell you about it another time.
Hmm.
I keep on threatening you with X-Men Unlimited. But while we've been gone,
yes, things
recently,
have been happening.
Things have been happening.
There's news on top of news.
The X-Men vote is back. We recorded our initial thoughts.
A quick little video that we put up on our Instagram.
Instagram and YouTube, if you want to check that out. Where are you at? So this will go up Thursday morning, which Thursday is the last day to vote.
It's the last day, so I have to make a decision.
You have to make a decision.
I still feel like I want to go Monet.
Interestingly enough, so it is 5:45. At 5 o'clock, Marvel posted an update.
Oh, really?
We have early election polling results.
See, this is why it's good to wait, you know?
Do you want it first to last or last to first?
Last to first.
In 10th place, having caught up 14% in the last 24 hours, Micromax.
Micromax.
In 9th place, we have Bling.
Oh, Bling is 9.
Avalanche in 8th. Siren in 7th.
Okay.
Gorgon in 6th.
Ooh.
And our top 5. Gentle.
Yeah.
Surge.
Oh.
Penance.
Oh, number 3.
Armor.
Oh, God.
Firestar. Number 1 is Firestar, having lost only 1% in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything against Firestar. Like, I'm not going to say something against her personally, because I don't know it much about her, but I think
it's boring.
Diversity is key, right? And not necessarily power set diversity, but just
both
person diversity.
Yeah, I think Firestar is kind of a boring choice. I get some of the reasoning in that she's served on a lot of other teams, so it does make a connection point to the broader Marvel universe. It's just I have not seen her have any Krakoan connection thus far.
Yeah.
So it feels out of place, and it feels repetitive in power set to Sunfire, and it just, to your point, does not add any diversity of character.
Yeah.
I think I'm leaning towards Penance as well.
I felt that from the beginning, and I do have a little bit of an inkling to go for Surge.
If Surge or Armor won, I wouldn't be against it.
Right, I wouldn't either. But I think I wanted to throw my vote to Penance, and I am now seeing the polls. I'm going to continue to throw my vote towards Penance.
Official statement.
Team Penance for perfection. That's what it is, isn't it?
That's the X-Wife Podcast.
Here's the thing. If you haven't voted yet, if it's Thursday the 13th and you haven't voted yet, then you could save this election for Penance. It could be up to you right
now.
Or
you could throw your vote away and vote for Micromax.
Or don't do that.
Also up to you.
But don't do that. I mean, that is your choice, but don't do that, please. I'm asking, not telling.
The only other news that's been up and about anything else about the election? Any was there anyone that was vying for your second place? I had a handful of options on my mind. It was Monet, Surge was up there. I also thought about Avalanche.
Yeah, no. I mean, I wasn't really drawn to any of the candidates aside from Monet. Surge, there were some good arguments about Surge, and her power set seems cool. And I like her blue hair. Yeah. But yeah. I don't have any other
top
candidate that is really, oh yeah, that's what I want.
I'm confidently going Penance as well, but I want to call her M or Monet, because we haven't really gotten clear information on how her ability to transform between that and the Penance state, you know, what this means for Hollow. And I feel like that needs to be addressed if we're going to talk about that.
Cool. Yeah, great. It's very confusing to me, so I'm not going to get down. I'm not going to.
Yeah, we're not
going to
dig in Monet, as you've said in the past.
Monet.
Right. But hopefully that means we had to explore. I thought she was a shoo-in, honestly, when I first saw it. But anyway, let's talk about those comics.
Okay, comics. Starting us off with two issues of X-Men Unlimited.
Right, because we missed that too. We just dialed in on Inferno. We get another chance for a Deadpool recap for Juggernaut's mission on a rocket towards the Warden. And he's also sprinkling in some Nazi jokes, which I thought was fun.
Yes, a few Nazi jokes.
Will they not see him coming?
Ha ha, ha 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 ha.
And a really cool use of the long panel with the rocket as Juggernaut lands on the prison being in a floating helicarrier.
Yeah, so basically in this issue, the rocket is going. Their goal is not to fight in the air. It is to take the helicarrier down. So they're trying to bring it down, and they do, but they're not quite as successful as they thought because, you know, the Warden just happened to experiment on himself.
He's not just going to have all these superheroes, supervillains, superpowers on the dungeon and not do something for himself. So he has been adding
not only one thing for himself, but 100 things for himself
of superpowers, because we get our tease for the next issue. 100 powers, and not one of them can make me a chicken parm sub. Both of these are written by Fabian Nicieza, art by Matthew Horick, and letters by Joe Sabino.
And here we are, the next one of these issues, but Deadpool's not around to give us a recap.
Primus!
And that was by far my favorite part of the issue.
Yeah, I also kind of scrolled through it, though. I really loved the fact that it was Primus, but having just read the previous installments, I feel like these do well for having an intro recap because they're so small and disposable that I don't necessarily remember exactly what was happening the week before.
Yeah.
But I get a little recap from a fun fourth wall breaking character telling me what's up. That long scroll of Primus being changed. These two issues have both had really good use of the vertical format.
Yes. Yes. And essentially what's happening to our team here is that,
you
know,
stopped.
You can't really beat someone who has 100 different mutant powers.
Yeah, the Unstoppables are being stopped. And Deadpool's not on the team.
Deadpool's not on the team.
Makes
Let's
that
make that
clear.
Official.
And neither is Quicksand.
Quicksand's like, I'm out.
It's more than I signed up for. She's out.
Not having this. Thank you. Goodbye.
Interesting add-on to this. The Warden, who's now going by the Human Adaptoid, his power set also has the ability to absorb new powers.
I mean, if you're gonna have 100 powers,
that's
one of them
a
might as well be
one.
To absorb other powers.
Which, I mean, I don't want to jump ahead, but that leads us to the end, which is very exciting, actually, about where this could go.
Oh, and why is that, sir?
Krakoa and all those powers there. And all those powers there.
Yeah, that's scary.
I love Deadpool's ridiculous answers here. This is a really, I think every of them have really been good Deadpool issues. I just feel like this is solid Deadpool.
Yes.
This is Deadpool with a good voice. And just the line about diving into the Marvel Universe handbook for powers. Mm-hmm. I thought that was hilarious and very spot on. The time to make the donut scroller. Again, another great scrolling panel.
Yes.
They did announce recently, speaking about X-Men Unlimited and Infinity Comics, they announced recently the first print of the first Infinity Comics.
I wonder if they'd be bound like vertically instead.
Yeah, we're going to see. Oh yeah,
like
so they
flip,
get flipped.
Like flip
yeah,
it up.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. And we get a philosophical showdown between Calm Kane and the Warden Adaptoid. I keep on questioning, what do I call Juggernaut? Because, you know, yeah, I try to always call mutants by their mutant names, but Juggernaut's not a mutant. And Juggernaut as a name is a long name to say. I don't. Juggs is weird.
The Knot.
The Knot. Jay Naughty.
No. Please, no.
Come on.
It's. I wish we didn't play this game just now. Because you know that's what you're going to call him from
Jay
here on
Naughty
out.
And the His.
No, that's got to go.
I love the end, though. the threat of the human adaptoid, the warden coming to Krakoa.
Yes.
To tap into all that power. Which I feel like also then wraps it up, or will wrap it up, and tie Juggernaut and Deadpool into more Krakoan stories. Because we know they're both coming out. Because that was something else that has been announced in the last week or so. Deadpool is officially listed in the Wolverine book.
Mm.
He is going to be a part of that book.
That's very exciting.
And we've seen Juggernaut on the covers for Legion of X.
Yes. So they're coming in. They're joining the party.
X-Men Unlimited, how you feel? Where you at?
It's fine.
It's fine.
I feel like not a lot happens, which is...
It's a lot of recap, and then it's like you're there.
But that wasn't the case with all of them. I just feel like that's been the case with these last two issues specifically.
Very segmented of the action.
I think it's maybe because I read both of them in a row, and if I had read them with a little bit of space between them, I would have felt differently. But the way that it's very much like it's a recap, and then it's a bunch of corny Deadpool jokes, and there's a little bit of action. Like, okay.
It's got a formula, you know?
Yeah, and that's good for tiny nuggets.
Right.
So I'm enjoying it.
But now let's get to the goods.
Yeah, so which one of these two comics are we going to talk about?
Oh, it's got to be X-Men 6.
Oh, it's got to be.
It's got to be X-Men 6. X-Men 6 is a week old. We already know who that guy is.
Oh, that guy.
And Marauders. That's the last Marauders by Jerry. That's the end of an era.
That's something. All right, let's open this bad boy up.
I like this cover. The social media elements of the announcement. This new hero.
Yes.
You know, you think about how in the public eye the X-Men, this X-Men team are the heroes of Krakoa being in New York City.
X-Men. Here we go. Page turn noise. And here he is, Captain Krakoa.
Captain Krakoa. I do think it's interesting. Nobody questions him or his identity throughout this. You know, Spider-Man does, at least just for your
just
superhero
say, like,
name.
Hey, you're like, new around here.
Right.
Well, people do say, like, I haven't seen you before. What's your name? And I guess it's not that strange to
nobody
have
really
a
knows.
New superhero just kind of pop up.
I guess. But to have a new superhero pop up and to be on the X-Men... And to not
maybe
have
maybe people don't know he's on the X-Men quite yet.
He's just sort of just there
by himself.
Yeah, we're just testing the waters. It's a PR rollout.
Yeah, we're going to start by saving a cat from a tree.
Right, classic superhero stuff. Burning buildings, a montage of good deeds. He's putting the star on the tree.
And just enough to get pulled into the next thing right before you have to say, I'm Captain Krakoa.
Right, because... We then give a perfect lead. I do want to shout out Pepe and Marta on this art.
Yes,
this
always.
Is so great.
It's so beautiful. I can never get enough of it. The colors are just, they pop. They contrast and complement in the best way. Like they accomplish both things at the same time so beautifully. It makes all the images pop.
Yeah, everything pops. And I feel like it has this texture to it. It's like this sheen in the background of these landscapes and on the visor of Captain Krakoa. And his face, his chin just looks so defined.
Look at that butt chin.
I think we're talking about this issue a week later. So we all know who Captain Krakoa is. I mean, I knew it months ago when I called it. Heck, even further back when you go to Cyclops and Captain America meeting at Xavier Mansion, I called him Captain Krakoa.
Yeah, you did.
If anyone would be Captain Krakoa, it would be Cyclops. And then here we are a couple months later, 6 months later.
But he doesn't seem very happy about it.
No, he's not at all.
So,
and I do actually like that as a story element.
Well, all right. So far in the story... He's saved things. He's done, you know, very heroic things, from saving someone from a burning building to putting the star back on top of the tree in Rockefeller Center. And he is, and then we get the title page, Whatever Happened to Captain Krakoa? And I got to tell you, all I think of is, and it's because of work, and it's because of my bosses, and it's because one of them does a show, a persona of Baby Jane, but there's a song, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane? And that's all I can think of. And it's like Some I don't know what old, that means. Like, kitschy, like, movie, and I wish I could tell you more, but all I know is Joe dresses up as Baby Jane every year and for a Dead and Dashing variety show, and that's all I can just hear. Whatever happened to Baby Jane when I read this? So maybe it's a callback to that. Maybe it's not.
Maybe it's just, who's this new guy? Written by Jerry Dugan, art by Pepe Larraz, color art by Marte Gracia, and letters by Clayton Cowles.
Just so you know, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane is a 1962 American psychological horror film, and it follows an aging former child star tormenting her paraplegic sister, a former movie star, in an old Hollywood mansion. So,
riveting.
Seems like it could potentially not tie in at all.
Not at all.
But I don't know, maybe
Jerry's got some deep pulls on his reference.
Maybe. But anyway, let's dig into this actual comic.
We jump into a council meeting, still dating ourselves with the council chairs. We are firmly in the reign of X with both of these issues, I believe, from visual cues.
Mm.
I don't want to step on Scott's moment here, but I wonder what the island's response to Destiny not only being resurrected, but immediately added to the council, as well as Colossus. I just feel like it's a lot of inside baseball, and I'm hoping that we get an outcry for public voting, like displeasure with the whims of the council, like Cyclops is protesting here.
Inside baseball?
Oh my gosh. Every time I use a sports term, I get crap about it.
You don't sports.
I sport.
What does inside baseball mean?
It's specifics only known to the team playing the game.
Okay.
Jargon.
Inside baseball. Well, Cyclops is upset. He doesn't want to follow the rule. He doesn't want to leave the room for the vote. And he Arthur fists his way off the page.
And he doesn't want Captain Krakoa on the X-Men. Which is a ridiculous way to phrase this, looking at it retrospectively. Like, I don't want this man on my team.
It's you, dude.
It's you, guy. Like, you know what we're talking about, right? Like, he knows it's not a new guy.
Yeah, it's weird.
We don't have the political influence to weather mutant resurrection at the moment. All we have is drugs and whiskey for our recognition of amnesty. And that's still with only half the countries of the world, which I think is an interesting side point about what's going on with Krakoa's relationships.
But we're going to take it to Araco for a second.
Yeah, some good character build for Sunfire.
Out to space. Again, the art in space especially is so mind-blowingly amazing.
I think this is one of the first missions where we've referenced that the team members do stuff outside of saving the day and eating food with local people.
Yes. Yeah, so Filong's on his way
coming
to what
hot.
They think is Araco.
Yeah.
And Sunfire's like, no, I got this. I'm going to take him down. I'll pop him back where he came from. But he doesn't land on Araco.
I went back to check out the details of this ride that Filong's been doing because he's been doing this over the course of the last few issues. He was approached by Gyrick for Orcus to continue in his steps of what he wanted to do and followed through with his plan. But with a twist, as I believe we've seen him, I think it was issue 4, powering himself up somehow along the way.
Oh, yeah.
So he's on this trip that would normally take, I think, 39 days, he says, and he's hoping to cut that in half. So not only that is a feat for himself to be able to be up there that quickly, but he's doing some other things to himself along the way that we see the result of later on.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. And he lands. He lands on the moon, and Sunfire just seems to be just politely asking him to
get out.
Go home.
I love this. Honestly, I really enjoyed this issue.
Me too.
Which is a good thing because I had been on the downslide with the last two. This page in particular, the one of the two of them and the gradual zoom in on Sunfire and Filong against each other, opposite sides. That next data page, though, that was... Whew, shots fired. Phobos, moon of Mars, is claimed by Filong for all mankind. Stand by for a message from the edge of the human frontier.
Yeah. Woohoo!
I want to stop here and talk about this for a second. Like, this is a big move by the humans, and especially now that Filong is connected to Orcus.
Mm-hmm.
Because initially, it was just him adapting his dream and plans, seemingly still pursuing his big goal in the background, but now in stages. But with this connection to Orcus and settling for all Earth vibe, it gets sort of aggressive.
At least it's seen so aggressive.
Right. It's like, hey, I'm going to perch right here.
I mean, it's not brought up specifically on this page. It's a little bit later. But from the perspective of the mutants, yes, they made a stand by claiming Mars as Arako. But they did that in like a, we're expanding ourselves again in our bubble outside of your territory. We are saying that we are our own nation. And I can understand how that can come across as threatening, but the humans are like, just, they took that as a threat. And then they say, well, this is our step in the war. And
right.
And it's like, but we are not at war with you.
Right. Well, especially it's just, if it was just Feelong on himself doing it, it'd be one thing. It'd be like, hey, I don't know if you saw this, but here's my transcripts of my notes. I've been working on this for years. This is my life's work. Can I just have this little bit of Mars? But now it's
right.
The human resistance to mutant supremacy claiming your outpost.
Yeah, it's just an interesting perspective to see the fallout of the creation of Arako and
right.
of Mars. Arako, of terraforming Mars.
As Feelong corrects him.
And just how it's perceived from different people and how it to them was a threatening and an attack, and now they're going to take action in this way.
And we actually get some really interesting data pages that support that in Marauders and from the X-Desk,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a cool combination
cool tie-in.
Of Jerry writing, because he's writing both of these stories, he's reacting to it in a different book.
Let's just talk about Vornak, because man,
Vornak.
Do I love him.
First appearance, last appearance. Let's go.
Let's go. He's like, yeah, this is going to be fun. I love fighting. This is awesome.
This is it's an interesting element about the Arako mutants. They're infinite in their design and invention. We have like 20 million or
mm-hmm.
however many million more than Earth mutants. So you could just make them up and make them as crazy as you want, because they've also been formed by outside forces and Amenth and Otherworld. But also they're completely disposable for the most part, because we don't have any attachment to
yeah.
them. So to see this epic warrior of, like, you have songs in your name, Vornak. Do you really need to do this?
The axe that cleaved the head of the Amenth goddess of pain.
Right, right.
Just taken out by one little burp.
It's an interesting dichotomy of what you have in the potential of the Arako mutants
mm-hmm.
and how that's just this wellspring of mutant potential.
But I also just love that in this particular situation, like, the Arako mutants are just like, a person, let's fight!
Yeah,
like,
well,
that's
they've been craving it.
That's their number one thing. Like, a duel, a battle, a challenge.
I haven't fought like this in ages.
Shall we? Yes, okay.
PJ mentioned this the other day when I was talking to him. Are the Arako more boastful than they actually are aggressive?
Maybe.
So, yes, the Omegas that we've seen on the Council and those that we saw in the tournament, Ten of Swords, they all seem to be big and intense, but are they actually tested, right? They've fought demons that you can seemingly slice their heads off, but have they fought Avengers or
right.
Avenger-level
like,
threats?
What is the caliber of the threats that they fought versus the caliber of the threats that are facing them now?
Right. And so are they just overconfident about what they've been? They've been working out on these one-shot KOs.
Big fish in a little pond
right.
situation.
Right.
Hmm.
But we also got some big fish here.
Yeah.
And we manufacture our new big fish with Feelong.
Yeah, he just opens his mouth and there he goes, just dead in the pit. Took him right out.
I just want to know what he did to himself.
Like,
and
what is that?
And is there potential for more? We see him just grab a new helmet because he burned through his old one.
Like, what is it? Like an acid explosion or sound waves?
Because
it
looks like he dislocated his jaw in the amount that he's able to open his mouth to release this force.
Just comes out. My God, what have you done?
This whole
Sunfire.
Thing. This really steps up Feelong in his importance that he needed, especially after his motivated introduction in the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this really makes him a threat.
For sure. And even the way that Sunfire approaches the situation of saying, hey, man, like, you can just leave. And then Vornak comes in and he just says, hey, y'all, like, I want to fight. And Sunfire's right. like, no,
ultimate
let's
diplomat.
Not fight. Like, we don't need to fight. Like, let's just solve this. It's cool. I'm going to get this guy to go home. And Feelong's like, yo, I'm not going home. Just tell your friends.
I'm here to
I'm
look at Mars.
I'm forming a bubble around this moon. It is mine now. I brought everything I need. Please back up. Go home. See you never.
The amount of ships that he brings, everything
it's
landing
ridiculous.
Behind him. Yeah.
It just seems such, it's interesting to me to
it's
know
a flex.
That Sunfire is going back and forth with Sword and they're talking about the situation and they know he's coming, but they can't see all the things he has with him. Like
right.
the fact that they're totally fine with just sending just Sunfire to do it. And even when Sunfire says like, I don't need no backup, like that to me is a moment of thinking back on the things that Wolverine's saying about how safety makes
yeah.
you just feel comfortable. And they just feel like it's comfortable. We don't need to worry about anything. There's nothing that could possibly threaten us.
We've got
this. And that's paralleled exactly in the way that the Iraqi mutant just like comes out and is like, oh, there's nothing that could possibly
fight.
Take me down. I'm going to win this fight. Hands down, no problem. Here I go. And everybody is wrong in that situation. Yeah.
Look at that spaceship, though. The space station that's set up. The corpse from the Onslaught Revelation when
oh, yeah.
he teleports Phobos back into orbit.
This is now another corpse they have.
Right. More proof that dead mutants. The amount of Wolverine. Someone, I can't remember who, commented the other day about just the number of adamantium skeletons. The volume of adamantium that Orcus has on
it's
a spaceship.
It's really
now.
Concerning. It's really concerning. And especially if... In this issue, we're also dealing with the fact that, you know, Captain Krakoa is Captain Krakoa, as Cyclops mentions later, because he fell so publicly.
Right.
So you're doing all of what you can do with what happens in this issue with Cyclops and Captain Krakoa to hide this fact, but yet Orcus has corpses. And I wonder if this little bit of... Like, this nugget of information about Orcus collecting Nightcrawler's corpse, is that information that we as the reader only know?
I would assume, yes.
Because how else would
they,
how
don't
would
know.
They know?
Yeah. And the X-Men or Krakoa has to know about the skeletons that have been retrieved from the X-Force missions.
Right, because they keep sending the same dang mutants over and over.
Right. Blurred Murdoch.
There he is, Blurred Murdoch.
Always hilarious. Glad to have him
eyes.
In the world. Especially this
Someone
running
joke.
Someone stole
your precious celestial body?
You want to talk about beautiful colors and this image, Captain Krakoa coming in the background as we now have an erected memorial to Cyclops. You fell in a very public. I fell in a public way. You know?
I mean, if this is saying, you know, to the public, Cyclops is done.
Right.
Cyclops is dead forever. That's obviously
a big thing.
A huge deal.
Right.
in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, even if not, just for the fact that they were in New York recently for this new team, but. Cyclops has been a mainstay. I mean, heroes die every now and then and they get resurrected, sure.
Right.
But everyone is going to feel something.
In the words of the Sandlot, heroes get remembered, but
legends
never
die.
Okay? So those who come back are legends. Legends never die.
Or Captain Krakoa.
It is also a cool thing to sort of have the public idea that Cyclops is no more, but... We know that he's still there and he still has his identity and he has this undercover thing. It's like his own Clark Kent, Superman.
Right.
You know, Matt Murdock, Daredevil.
And this is a whole new idea added to the wrinkle of resurrection.
Yeah.
The fact that you now have alternate personas created for mutants that you can't bring back publicly.
Yeah. Which is cool. Cool new costumes.
Cool new costume, cool new powers, cool new concept.
Yeah, because...
It's just,
because, okay, here's what I want to know. So we've seen Captain Krakoa do things
right.
in this issue.
He can fly. Which is a
so
big
like,
step up.
Is he flying because of his suit that is made by Forge, or is he flying because he was infused with additional mutant powers? Is he essentially the first Chimera?
Well, he's not the first, if he was, but I think that they're all enhancements to the suit and or enhancements to the tech that Forge has been working with.
But
and building.
Is he going to still have the I-beams? Because the I-beams is such a classic.
I don't think he can.
He can't.
Especially as Captain Krakoa. I feel like that's why
that would
the
be a
visor,
dead giveaway.
Right. I feel like that's why the visor is this full face visor covering up what would be his actual I-beams visor.
And like if they do something like if they do a mission in space, can he be Cyclops?
No.
He has to be Kuroa always.
But if you think about it, if the High Evolutionary, someone that has some ties to Earth, sees him as Cyclops.
It's all valid. I'm just trying to literally pull out every possible question I could think of at the moment.
I mean, my big question, Cyclops is dead. How do you feel?
How do I feel, Alicia?
Yeah.
I feel kind of sad for him. But also, Cyclops is not dead. That's the thing. It's like, okay.
Scott Summers isn't dead. Cyclops is dead.
Still freaking Cyclops walking around in the house.
The death of Moira X. Moira X is dead, right?
Yeah, but that's different.
Yeah.
He's, whatever.
The persona of Cyclops has been retired.
That's fine. He's still the same man.
Different powers.
But his history is still there.
Hey, let's talk about Ben Urich.
Oh, Ben Urich, who doesn't remember his meeting of Cyclops
ever. I called this too.
Yes, you
which,
did.
Which, I mean, that, what if they wipe Ben's mind? I think that I called it, but I'm not upset about the fact that I called it.
Well, hold on. While we're saying called it, I just want to refer to the last issue that we talked about, what will happen with Captain Krakoa. I did say Cyclops would die publicly, and then they would replace him with Captain Krakoa. So we're not going to just say that you called all of it. Okay? You did call Cyclops Captain Krakoa. Yes.
I love how you did say
that Ben Urich his mind would be erased. Yes. But I also did say that this is how they would solve the resurrection thing specifically.
All right. We called it. It's together. Not a competition between you and me.
But you never say, hey, we said.
I do. I play the tape on Inferno 4.
That's messed up because there were edits to Inferno 4.
I'm still really excited about everything that's going on with Ben Urich because I think it's just good storytelling.
Yes, for sure.
It adds a whole nother layer of everything that we've already taken for granted as the current story.
And also now Ben Urich is just going to be like, what was this great story I was going to write? And now I'm going to go back and try to figure it out, big dumb dummy.
Yeah. I think we were talking about this when we were talking about if this was a potential at the end of the last issue. This is over the line for heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, they're tampering with the news. That's not cool.
Yeah, they're protecting the story.
But here's my question for you. What business did Cyclops have making this phone call right now? Why does he want to talk to Ben Urich about the situation? Is he that bitter over the decision that he's going behind the back of Krakoa to continue to expose what's going on with Resurrection? Why is he doing this?
Right.
What good would it bring so let's say he doesn't know, right, that Ben Urich has forgotten about this part of the story. So he thinks Ben still knows that Cyclops died and was resurrected and that he saw Cyclops die again and now Captain Krakoa is here. What good is it going to do for you to be a friend of Cyclops and call Ben Urich? What do you have to say to him that is of any value in defending or saving space? For mutants.
Which, if you think about it, him calling him, how does he not know that Ben doesn't have this story anymore? Captain Krakoa as a persona, as an idea, does not work if Ben still has this story.
Right.
Which, if I'm Cyclops, I don't know that Jean and Emma know about the story because they read my mind and read Ben's mind as we walked away from the party in New York at the end of issue 5.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Which means that it had to have been one or both of them or the council as a whole.
Yeah, I'm just looking back at the council meeting. Doesn't seem like they say anything specifically about that. Ugh, well.
Overall thoughts?
I mean, I thought this was a really great issue.
I did too.
I like that we got this information about Captain Krakoa and this little one-off moment for Sunfire. I like that we started to kind of circle back on some of the things that have already been laid out instead of continuing to lay out. We've done all of the individual X-Men issues going up to this point have done a lot of giving you material to work with and
layering
setting
the
scene.
World.
Layering the worlds. And this actually is starting to now go back and double back on those things and say, what's the next step for those stories that we've seeded? So I thought that was done really well.
Yeah.
I love the art.
Oh, yeah. Love getting Pepe and Marta.
Yeah, them together, it's always gold. Yeah, I think that it sets up some high-stakes situations and makes me interested to see what the next issues are going to be like. What are we going to get from all of this stuff sort of colliding and coming crashing together? What about you? What are your overall thoughts?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was restorative of my faith in that I really liked the first three issues on a upward build. And then have been kind of checked out in the last two. contributing probably from the fourth to the fifth to really be checked out after the fifth. I was complaining about this title at the comic shop when I picked this issue up, but then took that back after I read this issue. It got me really excited to go into what is the next arc or arcs. You know, the one thing that still feels out of place and doesn't settle, and it's coming up again, is outside villains that have nothing to do with the X-Men coming in as threats. So you had Nightmare in issue 4.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have MODOK in a couple issues.
Oh, yeah. It's just...
Which, I get if this is now supposed to be a premier Marvel team, that you'd interact more with general Marvel villains while still building these three big bads for the X-Men themselves.
Yeah, I guess maybe if someone's not reading all the Krakoan books and they're just reading X-Men, it gives them nibbles into other universes that they might also be reading.
Yeah, it just felt a little out of place, but I'm into it still. You know, I'm on my toes.
Yeah, but I'm excited. For sure.
The Krakoan origin.
Oh, origin.
Looks like we're going to get the origin for Captain Krakoa.
Yeah, there he is on that little preview image.
So, questions.
Yeah.
Falsifying identities for publicly deceased mutants. Cyclops even says to Sink later on in the issue, the way I fell was so public.
Yeah.
Where does this end? What does this open up? Is this ethically...
I mean, I think it really depends on what is happening with each mutant going forward. You know, I think it's a necessity if you want to keep Resurrection a secret.
On the wraps, yeah.
You have to do it. There's no way around it. I think if you can have a public battle and you can clearly see mutants walking away, or you don't know if they died or not, you know, and there's, they could have just been badly injured. Someone.
And they've got healing mutants. So.
Right. And so you can believe that someone could come back from something that might appear to be catastrophic. But if you flat out see a mutant die in a public situation.
And then he's doing a mission the next day.
You need to have a way to cover that up. I think it definitely poses an interesting question in how many times are they going to have to do something like
right.
this.
And
but you also think about up until this point, mutants couldn't. There was no resurrection for mutants, and it appeared that mutants died all the time.
Right. Besides the longevity of continuity, there was no resurrection of mutants.
Right. So, but that's what I'm saying is, so the fact that a mutant died publicly,
and they gave him a new name.
It doesn't. I don't think it's going to be a continuous like, oh man, now Rogue's dead, and we need a new identity for Rogue. But I do think the X-Men in particular, being the out in the human world most often fighting team, are the ones who are most likely to be
publicly
right. rebranded.
Right. So we don't know how Cyclops died.
No.
But we know that he died, and he died publicly. If there was something that killed all the X-Men, you know, do you just come out with a new team? And
you do, and
there,
I think in... Sorry.
Is there someone that's, like, testing the... Like, we know that Dr. Stasis has been testing the X-Men.
Right. I think you do come out with a new team, but I think you have to be more mindful about what people know about mutants, and the fact that Captain Krakoa is making an appearance after they've whatever on Krakoa, that's fine. But let's say the whole X-Men team dies. You don't come back out with a whole slew
of new
X-Men that no one's
ever heard of.
You need to be mindful about how you're peppering that in. And like, you're like, okay, here's a bunch of, because to the point of right, the argument for Surge in within the election and even for Monet is that you have these teams who are constantly going to the academy and learning and building and on their way to becoming an X-Men. So people have seen younger mutants in training. So you need to mix in those people coming up and then maybe one or two of these newfound personas. But you can't just do, oh, all seven of them are dead, and here's seven brand new ones,
all
with mutants you've
Krakoa
never heard
powers.
Of, with all with Krakoan technology infused in their suits.
Yeah,
but that should become a more prevalent thing. Krakoan technology infused in their suits,
and that's I think what Forge is working on for the
that's
council.
That's Forge's dream.
Yeah,
yeah.
Speaking of adding to the team, the X-Men vote will be adding to this current team.
Yes,
that seems to have been established. This is not replacing. This is just additive to this team. At least that's what we know so far. There is rumor or people talking, and it has been hinted at in the book, that they're dividing into two squads, which I like. It means we might even get more than one added to the team.
Very interesting.
How long does this last? How long does Cyclops run around as Captain Krakoa?
Forever. This is it, baby.
This is it? Is there
any... As long as the Krakoan age is in existence, unless you're going to tell me that they're going to say it's okay to reveal resurrection protocols.
Right.
As long as resurrection protocols are kept a secret, Cyclops is Captain Krakoa. That's it.
Is there anything...
Stop throwing a fit about it and just deal.
Is there anything that brings him out of this alias?
The
Besides admittance of, like, if Corsair is like, where's my son?
Yeah, but see, in that situation, I feel like
hopefully
that's...
Hopefully he's on the inn. Like
there are going to be everybody on Krakoa. Everybody in the X-Men team knows. When he walks around Krakoa, he's going to be Scott or he's going to be Cyclops.
What if there's pictures? What if we already know that they're tapped. They already have audio. What if someone's like, yeah, Cyclops was... We don't call him that. Could be bugged.
I just think it's a public-facing thing. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
It's not currently, but could be. And I think that that's interesting. And that's where these questions are coming from. That's where
this
excitement is
coming
from. Well, that's
what I'm saying. Scott, chill out. It's not that big of a deal. You keep your friends close. You have an alternate identity, whatever.
Last question. Where does Phelong sit with you at the end of this issue? And what about this title as a whole? I think we talked really about that earlier. But six issues is usually considered an arc. And through that, we've fully introduce the three threats that started in issue one. The first issue is even titled In Threes. So these six issues, we've really introduced some new concepts, this idea of genetic modification, this expansion and collective Orcus rank buildup, and this game world threat of Cordyceps Jones just throwing heat.
Rolling the dice. I am scared of Phelong. I'm scared of him. I don't know what he's got going on. I don't understand what that power set he has in.
Yeah.
I'm worried about that situation.
Yeah. I like villains with staying power, though. And both of these agents of Orcus are stepping up to have huge control over sections of this world.
Oh, yeah. When I say I'm scared, I mean it in the best way possible.
Right. It's a good thing. It's
riveting.
A good scared.
All right. Can we talk about Marauders now?
Absolutely.
Marauders number 27.
Starts and finishes. Such a beautiful cover comparison.
Such a beautiful cover. I love the beautiful phoenix feeling X that Pyro is shooting flames of.
Yeah.
This issue was so freaking good.
It was so jam-packed.
It was so good. I can't. I love it. I love it.
These covers, issue 27, issue 1. And it really shows the evolution of the team and how the concept of Marauders grew,
mm-hmm.
right? Emma's side project of the Marauders, it grew to take her primary attention and the entire Hellfire Training Company as Kate and Sebastian join in.
Yeah. It's really exciting where it's gone, and it's really exciting to see what this issue sets up.
Right, because this is the last Marauders of Jerry's run. I believe we will be getting a new number one and a new renumbering.
Mm.
But it'll be an entirely different focus. It'll be an original focus for the Marauders, what they set out to be at the start.
Yes, which is very exciting.
Which, we see, comparing our Kates, we have full pirate transformation from our captain.
Yes.
We have the Red Bishop stepping in, standing strong, and then adding in Tempo and Callisto in the background.
Yes, which is, I can't wait for more Tempo.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been so many threads, and I've said it, and I'm going to say it throughout, there's been so many threads to Krakoa introduced through Marauders.
Mm.
That it grew, the initial idea really only lasted the first six issues or stayed within. Once Kate died, it was like, what are we now? What do we do?
Right. All right. Here we go. The final Jerry Marauder page turn noise. Oh, Catherine.
And interesting to talk about this as a full arc. The problem that kicked off our series in issue one is still in question.
Yeah.
Kate's gates.
Kate's gates. She still can't get through the gates.
And it's a core of the confusion. Kate disrupts technology when she walks through it, except for Krakoan technology.
I loved that. I loved the questioning, the back and forth conversation just between her and Forge and their little quips, and her saying you mean because I can get through any door except this one? And he's no, because this one this technology upsets you or disrupts you versus you disrupting it. And just that the different perspectives of this particular problem and the way that they look at it and just his sassy little eyebrow raise.
Yeah, yeah. I just I keep on thinking, like, this is a new interesting problem for Forge to mustache about. He's excited about it. He loves it.
Yeah.
Even if he's already got something on his plate, which for the council, I feel like might be Captain Krakoa.
Maybe. Could be.
Or something that we don't know otherwise. Might be the teased Cerebrax lead-in.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Well, we got our title page. How I Learned to Stop Worrying About Walking the Plank.
Bon voyage.
Aw, man.
Written by Jerry Dugan. Art by Matteo Lali and Phil Noto. Color art by Rain Barreto and Phil Noto. Letters by Corey Petit.
Ooh, ooh. We're digging in. And we get this little recap by our girl, Emma. Get it. Emma Frost.
It feels nice after having Inferno, this recap of Emma's story, coming into the nation, building out, adding Kate to the roster, resurrecting the Cuckoos. It puts into context the number of things that Emma has been doing to set up Krakoa's place and prominence on the world scale, but also her operation within that.
Yeah, and I love the way that she starts out saying, like, the boys told me a story.
Yes.
That is such a sassy little, like, they told me a story, quote unquote, a story. Not the truth. They told me a story. They sang me a song to get me to do what it is that I have done thus far.
Which is interesting because I get that suspicion. But I believe that we're still in a pre-Inferno revelation world, right? I think we see the council in this issue a little later on, and it's not with Destiny and Colossus. So is this before she knows? Which doesn't really make sense
this
topic of the soon-to-be-renamed Moira MacTaggert Memorial Hospital.
Yes, I feel like this is maybe...
Blurring the line
during that week of ambient time when... Emma was sort of getting the ducks in a row.
Right.
And I do think it's interesting that we know that this conversation about Immortal X-Men is going to revolve a little bit around Sinister, right? That nugget has been dropped in different interviews.
The initial, yes. Sinister is going to have a big role in the beginning, and the entire council is going to be prominent throughout, and especially the ones that don't have other books.
Yeah, so in seeing... That as part of the thing, the fact that in the clip where she says, and men I don't trust, and then later on when she's talking about what happens with the decisions that are made throughout this book, there's another nod to Sinister being sort of a wrench in the plan, which I just think is interesting.
After Emma's story, we get Lourdes' story.
Yeah, she's telling her little feelings to Lourdes, which I think is interesting because you think about... From this perspective, it seems like Emma hasn't opened up in this capacity to anyone else, really.
Well, even...
You know, she's talking about, like, the weight of all of this. And she always puts on this front of how she's dealing with it. But she's opening up to Lourdes and saying, like, this is a lot.
Right. And she says, I'm lonely for the first time. And I liked it for a while, but that's getting old. Yes, her and Kate really bonded. Yes, she's set up some more business propositions with a couple of other mutants. Maybe she's become really good friends with Jumbo. But... She's been, like, hardcore working career girl before everything else
for
the last 2 years as she's been setting up everything Hellfire.
Yeah. And I feel like maybe she means in a romantic way, but I also just think...
No, I think it's,
it's more of, like, I don't have a person to confide in.
I'm alone personally.
I need a person who I feel like I can really fully trust. And I don't think that she doesn't feel like she can trust Kate, but I feel like her relationship with Kate is more like mentor-mentee.
Yeah.
And so she
Less
doesn't...
of a girl's talk.
She doesn't open that up.
Right. In the same way that she can't, like, unload on the Cuckoos because they're kind of like her daughters/her clones.
Yeah. But Lourdes is here for it.
Yeah.
And she's been training for this.
Right. It's tying together the pieces that have been threading throughout the last few issues of Marauders and even teased in X-Men... connecting Lourdes into Xavier's initial announcement. I'm not afraid of Sebastian Shaw anymore.
Woohoo, yeah, girl.
As Emma offers Lourdes her chair in the Hellfire Club.
Big moves.
Which I think, like I just want to make that distinction. The differences between, because it'll come up again later, the differences between their council seat and their powers in Hellfire Trading Company.
Mm-hmm.
And who exactly, this is just a general question that I've been thinking of, like, who owns Hellfire Trading Company?
I think it's owned by Krakoa. It's managed. Like, the council, quote-unquote, owns it.
Right.
But it's managed by...
Right.
Whoever's in the seats.
And do they have shares? I feel like that's a part that has not yet been defined.
I don't know. Stocks. Finances.
Ah, you say business terms. You're not business. You don't business.
Oh, please. That I wouldn't put past you in a heartbeat. Business terms, great. Math terms, let's get it. Sports terms are questionable.
Hey, Mr. Nobody and the Blade.
I'm sorry, but this buddy comedy between the two of them is legitimately the best.
I love Bishop's outfit.
I can't. And just the way he, like, he at first is like, I'm not into this. I did not read the backstory. I'm not here for this. Meanwhile, I'm going to hit golf balls off the side and say,
such a power move.
We don't negotiate.
I love that Pyro's romance novels make another guest appearance as he pens their backstories as well. They're trying to sell old S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarriers to Verendi. Another reference to what's happening to S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarriers this week.
It's a really cool, you know, what ends up. At first I was like, why are they doing this? What's going on? And then Kate makes a mention of it being sort of a Robin Hood situation.
Right.
Steal from the rich to give to the poor.
Right, because they sneak $8 billion in crypto away from the Hellfire Babies just before the real Mistress Blade and Nobody arrive.
It's just this whole scenario, all of the art here, the way Pyro is like leaning into Bishop, and Bishop is just very chill, and he's like, this is not going to go well for us. This is not going to go well for us. I told you this was not going to go well for us. But the Marauder's there to bail them out.
Yeah. Escaping the fight just in time, landing on this flying ship. We got our data page letter from the X desk, which brings together details we already know, but contextualizes them together in an interesting way. We get that recap of the helicarrier theft, as well as how that's affecting other things. References to Feelong's Martian outpost. Word travels fast. The X-Desk is not one and the same with Feelong or Orcus, but there is some communication connection between members.
I want to know what this P.S. thank you whoever left that beautiful orchid on my desk was. Who is that?
Well, we don't know, but Dolores was recently shot.
Right.
So she's recovering. Someone's leaving her a flower in that. That was in, what, X-Force?
Is it actually an... Okay, questions that immediately pop up.
Oh, yeah.
Is it actually an orchid, or is it like an orcus orchid, some
right,
kind
yeah.
of like symbol?
Wiretap.
And or is it actually a Krakoan flower of some kind?
Could be everything.
Could be anything.
Interesting way to view what taking Mars means to various people. This is what I was talking about when we mentioned it in X-Men. It seemed as though taking Mars, turning it into a Rocco, was a way of de-escalation, or at least that was the intent for the mutants. Taking the problematic, quote-unquote, Araki and moving them to their own place. It was brought up in Hellfire Galley. You know, the world was aware of all of these new mutants, this giant heat signature in the middle of the ocean. What were you going to do about it? Well, this is what we were going to do about it. But now, seeing the number of people who took it as a provocation, even though there was no previous claim to Mars, aside for Feelong and his interior plans.
Yeah, it's just an interesting lens to look at the world in.
Right.
That, like, anyone doing something to better themselves is automatically perceived as a threat to other people or
right.
an attack
you take this
by
big,
other people.
You take this, you make this big power move and take this big position. I mean, let's argue the fact that saying that you're the capital of Seoul
100%,
and the regent
yes.
of Seoul, that is stepping over the line. Yes, that is not just, all right, we moved a bunch of mutants so you wouldn't
not,
be worried about
it's
them.
It's not like, hey, we just did some Habitat for Humanity up in
right.
here. We
that's
did some,
renovations. That's some stuff that's going to piss off Doom, and then he's going to be this giant force to reckon with.
I can't wait to see Doom back in things.
He's coming. I feel like it.
Well,
what Dolores mentions, the threat that human supremacists may present, indicates a more open-minded stance from the X-Desk and the CIA.
Yes, that they're starting to see, well, she got shot, right?
Right,
so
by a human, too.
She's starting to see a little bit wider perspective of what exactly has been going on and where the threats are coming from and who's the initiator of the threats.
Right, right. Who's provoking who?
But now it's time for Wilhelmina and Callisto to have a magical moment.
Yeah, because Verendi has cut Wilhelmina out completely.
No more money for you, and we're going to send a Reaver to take you down.
Callisto with the save and kill.
But she didn't mean to.
Right.
She's like, oh man, I actually killed him.
And an interesting way to help Wilhelmina, a visually disturbing way, sure. but it builds out another point of interest.
Let me put my fingers inside your skin of your face and just give you a new look. Mask. Who is this?
Mask in the hospital. Mask. So this has been established throughout Marauders in the last couple of issues on Madripoor that Mask, the former Morlock that has the ability to reshape your appearance,
right.
He is now a world-renowned plastic surgeon at this hospital and able to fix people's faces and physical affections.
And this is where we get the soon-to-be-renamed Moira MacTaggert Hospital.
Right, actually which, being there.
Which does make me feel like this is happening within that downtime of we're making some changes.
It's interesting, though, because when we see, I believe we see it later on in this issue, when she makes her move about what's next, it's pre-Inferno Council.
Mm.
It's Reign of Ten.
Well, we're going to give Sebastian a little talking to.
Yeah.
And I mean, the next few pages or the rest of this issue with Sebastian Shaw, they boil my blood. This man, he boils my blood in the best way.
He's got moves.
He's got moves, but he's also being told to sit down.
Sure, yeah. And he's
Lors
got moves
is not
for
here
that.
For you.
No.
She is here for the Hellfire Trading Company.
Yeah, and she pulls a fast one even on Emma. Emma's like, girl, that's not what we were talking
I'm
about.
I'm going to take your seat, Sebastian.
No.
And he's like, okay, ma'am, yes, great.
Oh, he's in? Good.
Emma's like, but I don't want to do this anymore.
It's cool to see this as both Emma and Shaw were vying for Lords to take their seat as they're focusing their priorities on the Quiet Council responsibilities, tying together loose ends and setting them up for the Immortal X-Men title.
What's interesting is I kind of feel like Shaw is looking at this going, oh, Emma and Lords are coming to me saying Lords is going to take my seat. So that means Emma's still going to have her seat and be on the council. So let me shift my focus to the council because then I'll one up Emma. But little does he know, Emma is not going to have her seat in the Hellfire Trading Company either.
Right, as we find
out
later.
And so you shall not be one-upping her, or it'll be more difficult for you. Back on that battle and ship.
Yeah, I just love their calm nature as
there
they're clinking champagne.
Glug, glug, glug.
As everyone's just fighting and being destroyed by these robots. Lors' power, actually using it offensively here, combining, teleporting one robot into another.
It's awesome.
Kate's getting an update, though. Her team is really making some moves.
Like mid-battle, Pyro.
Deal with this, hey.
I'm going to go do a book tour. And Christian is like, on behalf of Iceman, he's out.
We're taking a vacation. He's been going through some stuff. I like that this sets up an interesting thread for Iceman, right? What started in the Fin Fang Foom issue, really actually what started with Planet Size X-Men, also by Jerry, was something that would then have ramifications on him and his capabilities. What could be next?
It also is setting up something interesting and new for Christian because he's saying, I'm going to go on this adventure and I'm going to come back with a new mutant name.
Which he's not
one
had,
which is
right.
My own. Which is like, okay, so you two are going off and something's going to happen.
Right.
Are
hopefully
they going to get a spinoff?
Maybe
a book?
Maybe a Marvel
something?
Unlimited, an X-Men Unlimited story about what goes on with them.
That'd be cool.
There actually was an Iceman focused Infinity comic that we didn't read.
Oh.
I think it was like a New Year's comic.
Interesting. But here's Iceman, just off, battling. Just for the, why are you here? Just because I wanted to see if I could.
I just wanted to stir some stuff up. Niflhelm.
Bring out the ones who fight Thor.
We are the ones who fight Thor. These frost giants just getting whooped.
Yeah, it's just rough. It's a rough time. This back-to-back shot of Kate and Bishop is so epic. And just her asking him, like, you're not leaving too, right?
Right.
It's just so magical.
Still retaining some of that Marauders classic. And interesting to think about. So Kate, by the end of this issue, is not leaving her seat.
Correct.
She has her seat on the council. She has her seat as the Red Queen of the Hellfire Trading Company. And she has her Red Bishop in Bishop.
I would say she is the connection point between the council and the Hellfire Trading Company.
Right, actually
like,
having her
the
hand
link,
in
right?
The
she's in both things. And now she is the most senior. Like, even though it seems the White Queen spot is the head spot, she is the most senior of the queens.
Right.
She's and actually, it's all queens.
She's actually been in the roles.
All queens. No kings. I like it. I don't, however, know how I feel about the Cuckoos being the White Queen together.
Mom and the girls, yeah. The 5-in-1 will serve as the White Queen of the Hellfire Trading Company.
Like, I don't know that I love that Emma's giving up the title of White Queen.
I don't think that, because that's kind of her mutant name in the sense that she doesn't really go by anything else. And she's always been the White Queen, even though she was at one point the Black Queen or the Black King of the Hellfire Trading Company.
Interesting. But I do like how the Cuckoos did a little flippy-do. They used to all wear white and one of them would wear black. But now the one who wears white makes the has the final say for the day.
That's the White Queen for the day.
Which is cool. And I also like the fact that they seem to have come to Emma to say, we know that you need a change and we want to offer this for you. And at first she shut them down, but now she's like, no, you're right. This is what it should be.
This is exactly what I need. Which proves to her earlier point, she's not alone. You know, she does have, yes, it's your clone daughters. Sure. Is that great? No. That's your only friends? Probably not. But maybe you can find some new friends.
Yeah. And I do see what you're saying as far as this image of her approaching the council.
Right. This is after all the changes. We are in a post-Inferno world, which actually, to counteract that, in the timeline at the end of this issue, I believe Inferno comes after this issue originally.
So maybe that's why. Maybe it was
Inferno 4 comes out. Yeah. So like.
So like this was, we can't give this away, but this is why Emma's doing this.
But Destiny's been revealed since issue 1 of Inferno, 4 months earlier.
Hmm. Well,
it's just interesting to think about the timeline of different events slotting.
I've said it multiple times and I'm sticking to it. I would like Marvel to present me with a timeline.
Yeah, you figure it out yourself.
No, I want to know what it really is.
It's all headcanon. If they leave it vague, it can be interpreted.
I don't
like it.
That's
good literature. You know, that's good reading.
Shh.
It leaves open
Stop
interpretation.
Now. We've got an email. This is where it comes.
We've got a couple emails,
the Shaw-ness of it all.
Yeah. Shaw cedes power to lords, but has private messages to Shinobi, building some interest in a internal takeover, perhaps.
But then straight up goes and says to lords, hey, keep your eyes on Shinobi. Like,
you should, yeah, right.
Who are you loyal to,
He's just dropping a snake into a boxing ring and he's saying, like, hey, I know you're fighting each other, but also here's a snake.
Throw it in this hay and run away
right.
and see what happens.
I think he's also selling the new ruling women short. Maybe not the Cuckoos, but Kate's got some experience. She a little bit knows what she's doing. And I expect some big things from lords, too.
But that doesn't surprise me at all. That
because he's a chauvinist.
Because he's like, oh, yeah, these little girls are taking over. Ha, ha, ha. It's going to crumble. And, you know.
What do they know about business? Take them on, Shinobi.
Yeah, Shinobi. I feel like your dad not dad is setting you up for failure right there, my friend.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it'd be one thing if he didn't just flat out then turn around and say to Lord, say, keep your eye on Shinobi.
Right.
Like,
it just seeds
what's
to come.
Why?
Which, yeah. Speaking of what's to come.
What is she doing?
Ah, she's.
I'm a little concerned at this moment.
I think this is a very interesting setup.
I do think it's interesting, but I know that, you know, so Kate, you're going to have a conversation with Forge in the beginning of the issue, and he's going to say, I'm still working on it. Don't worry. I got you.
He's been working on it.
Science has the answer.
He's been working on it for 27 issues, and he still doesn't have an answer.
I know, but did she say, hey, Forge, I'm also going to go ask Mr. Fantastic?
No.
Like,
well,
cause
she has
that's kind of messed up.
She has more of a personal relationship with Reed in the sense that she's had some connection to Franklin, but also she was brought to Reed and eventually Dr. Doom to fix what happened to her.
Right, the first time when she was
all phase-y.
When she
couldn't unphase, right. So trying to understand and know how her powers work.
But here's also something that's interesting and also it's a point for Kate in my book. Charles took something from him.
Right.
And he wants it back.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, no problem.
I'll play.
Fair trade. Let's go.
Which I love that building in the background.
Yeah. And then we get the preview page with
the one that we've seen with Cassandra
Nova. Cassandra Nova on it, which still there was nothing. I thought maybe in this issue there will be some kind of hint as to why and how Cassandra Nova is getting involved in this equation.
Right.
And we get nothing.
Well, we still have the annual in between that kind of sets up. And then we have Cassandra is likely going to be the big reveal in issue one or the big thing that kicks off this thing.
Yeah, it's
this,
just
this
I
new
just,
run.
I mean, this quote, I'm here to ruthlessly defend our kind. I've grown so bored of bloodless hands. Oh, my goodness, gravy. Like, that is insane within itself. Outside of the fact that you just, what I know about Cassandra Nova, the little that I've learned about her, and it blows my mind. You know, you think about all the layers of things that are going on leading up to this point, what has happened with Inferno and where the council is at with Resurrection in that standpoint, what happened in Trial of Magneto and what portals that opens up with continued resurrection and the ability to resurrect people. Like, why and how is Cassandra resurrected? Or was she even dead? I don't know. Where'd she been?
Everywhere.
It was a great issue. I loved it so much.
Yeah. Tell me overall thoughts.
I thought it was a really nice callback to the camaraderie and the relationship building that I found to be one of my favorite things about Marauders in the beginning. Just the way that all the characters played off of each other. We got little nuggets of all of that. All the main players in the original Marauders got a moment to say, hey, this is where we have come to at this point. This is where we're going now.
Yeah, it feels like a really nice bow.
It was a really nice ending. It was a nice way to say, hey, this iteration of this book is ending, but these stories for these characters are not ending, and this is where they're going. And it gave you, you know, the opportunity, like, if you don't want to follow up on Pyro's book tour, if you don't want to know what's going to happen with Iceman and Christian,
Or Madripoor.
Right. You don't need to. You know that, okay, now that exists in its own world. And if you want to just keep on following the Marauders, you can. But, and it also puts all those stories in places where it'd be okay if we didn't hear about them right away.
Right. And they can still percolate in the background.
Yeah. So I think overall that's what makes it such a great issue is that there was a lot of nice character moments. There was comedy. There was action, beautiful spreads of images, nice setups, and nice endings for things.
Yeah. This was peak Marauders in my mind in the sense that it was a great end to a lot of the buildup and threads, but also set up what else could be. And it really made you think back at everything that Marauders has brought to the table. Because I've said it before, right? Marauders as a pirate book, that was the first six issues. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, it's really been the Hellfire Trading Company.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's been what other threads. And even as we're talking about this issue and we're acknowledging not even all of the threads, some of at least, the threads that have been introduced and set up through this.
Yep.
The leading of the councils, the leading of the Hellfire Trading Company, the now connection to the UN through Harry Leland. The export business and what that means to Krakoa as a nation, Madripoor and the foothold that they now have in that island, the battle that they have with the Hellfire babies, Morlocks and what they're doing in Arizona, which wasn't really talked about in this issue, but all the personal stories that have been very light. And I will say that is my one, I don't say criticism, but this was very much so the Kate and Emma show in that they were the leads of the book. This was their story. I don't have a problem with that because I feel like they had a great dynamic and they were centered through the Hellfire Trading Company's building throughout this as a book. I just feel like we have to take a second to just acknowledge how much Jerry has seeded into
the Krakoan world through
this one title.
Yeah. So many things.
It neatly wrapped up a lot or moved things forward. And we don't know everything, and we should never know everything. You know, this is Claremonting at its peak, if you want to call it that.
But that's okay.
That's what everybody calls it.
Okay, well, I'm not everybody.
There you go. As a title, I feel like it's been setting up Jerry's own little corner to play with. You've seen the Reavers appear in X-Men, these new Reavers. I'm curious to see if he'll have a second title. Or some of this energy will just go into the summer crossover event that we know is coming that he is involved in the writing of.
Yeah, maybe. There's just so much to play with and so much. It's just so well structured that you could pick it back up at any point. You could leave it down for a little while. And I personally really enjoyed having Mateo Lawley back on the book.
Oh, yeah. It felt like a love letter to the series as a whole. Even Phil Noto, who didn't have a whole lot of involvement on Marauders, only really recently, and then I think maybe 1 through 10 of Swords, but maybe not. I feel like the two of them together with Jerry, this was like Jerry's end song of his first phase as he continues in with the second phase with the X-Men.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, you want to speak about, he is also writing the Devil's Reign tie-in, which I think, you know, that does likely answer some of those questions about what comes next with some of these plot threads and how they might weave in. I feel like Lords is going to play a big part in that with it tying to Kingpin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she specifically brings it up. So she mentions him.
And I think I didn't mention it before, but I was thinking a story like Devil's Reign, how does that affect Captain Krakoa?
Right.
Something to think about, and something to think about next week when we get our first issue of Devil's Reign X-Men number one.
Ooh.
But before we get to that, we got some questions about Marauders.
Oh.
This is the end of Marauders as we know it currently. How does that feel? The end of the story of Kate and Emma, the end of Jerry's run.
First of all, pish posh, the end of the story of Kate and Emma. Kate and Emma are intertwined.
Sure.
They
just, sure.
You need to cool it on that front. Can I paraphrase
that, or can I reframe that? I feel like it's the end of them having their focal point in a book.
That
yes, their story is still going to continue, but to have a full story that was really nurturing and adding to that relationship, this is the end of that.
Yes.
That was definitely the focus. You swerved me off the pirate book at the beginning, and you made it like this team up between these two.
Yes,
you were
so
power.
Upset about it.
No, I wasn't upset. I wanted more of the pirate book.
So can I answer your question now?
Yes, I'm just doing the thing I do.
Okay. I am excited about where both of their journeys are going to go. I'm excited about what Marauders is about to become. I'm excited to see more Bishop. I'm excited to get Tempo in there. I'm excited to learn more about the new members of the team and see where that goes. I want the pirate adventure. So I want more Kate, more what's happening. I'm dying to know why she can't use a Krakoan gate.
Yeah, yeah.
And for that to finally be maybe coming back, I think everything that's being set up in how this is ending and how the new run of Marauders is starting is exciting to me. I think, yes, there is a bittersweetness to the fact that Kate and Emma, I don't get a Kate and Emma book anymore, but I think that Immortal X-Men and where Emma is going with the council, like, I'm still going to get my get it Emma Frost moments.
You're going to get a Kate book, and then you're going to get a Kate and Emma book,
yeah.
Or at least Kate and Emma as part of an ensemble book.
Right, so that's all good with me, baby.
Is this a good thing, separating the council from Hellfire Trading Company, sharing the responsibility, giving more focus to different mutants to step in and take some of that responsibility off their plates?
I do think so. I think because it's less for me about the responsibility, I think that's logically the right answer. But I think what it's doing is it's giving you it. Okay. Not to bring it up, but let's talk about X Corp for a second, right? Like, X Corp was the purpose of that book was to set up this idea of the business end of Krakoa. And I think the business end of Krakoa can flourish in a more council based book, but we also want stories about the mutants of Krakoa.
Yes.
And the change of the tone into what Marauders is doing is going to give you the ability to now live in that world in which we've created a little bit more on the mutant side of things, of how are we getting more mutants? How can we have these little more like one-off stories or like action-packed, this is the mission we're going on today, this is the mission we're going on today kind of book. That then can still have a larger overarching story, but mm-hmm. still gives you those little like nuggets of action-packed story that I think we want, in contrast to these books that have more of a political tone.
Yeah.
I'm pretty proud of that statement.
Yeah, no, that was great. That was great. Where do we get our updates from the Hellfire Trading Company from now? And I did think of something as I was reading this question over. Is it just now, is the next time that we hear from the Hellfire Trading Company through a little bit of Immortal X-Men, but then at the Hellfire Gala, if there is one coming in June, and what does that look like? Is that a crossover event? Is that just a one shot?
I think
you had said a fan event in our video.
I think maybe the Hellfire Gala is more of a fan event this year. As far as where we hear about the Hellfire Trading Company, I just think that that is one of the stories that's going to be put on pause in a way. But I also think, who knows, like, where's Lords going to be?
Right.
Like, if Lords is still going to be a thread within Marauders, I think basically they're setting up Lords to be the key point for the trading company itself, because Emma's off doing this other thing. Like, Lords and the Cuckoos are kind of running, like, the business things. And I think, but I personally think that the tone of the books is going to shift into more focusing
on the mutants and less on the political business. World building, right? We set up that we have medicines, we have whiskey, we have imports and exports, and we're setting up our financial holdings, and we're building bridges, and we're burning bridges with financial and business institutions. Yeah. But now with what happened in Inferno and what these stories being focused on gathering other mutants and just the fact that the X-Men vote is happening again and a lot of these other stories that are coming out, I feel like are going to be more focused on the journey that the mutants are taking within Krakoa as, like, the phase of building Krakoa is coming to an end, right. so to speak, you
right,
know?
Right, because it's already established, right? Now we
the last 2 years have been establishing, building, growing, now making the run. Structure, and now, like, this, what can happen inside that structure?
Right. What's next for Iceman?
I don't know. Iceman, I feel like the way they set it up, he could be bopping around between, like, books. Like, he's going to go hang out with something with Thor for a little while, and then he's going to go, like, I don't know. We just feel like he's going off on an adventure.
It feels like big things. I feel as though the X-Men as a team would feel regressive towards him.
Mm.
You know, he's been an X-Man. He's one of the original X-Men. What he's going through now feels bigger, feels larger than just that as an idea.
He's the Harry Styles of the X-Men. Of the X-Men's, what were they? One Direction. So, like, he's going off and doing big solo projects now.
Is he's gonna got get his own, fame. Is he going to get his own solo Ice book? Man. Are we getting an Iceman book?
Maybe.
Maybe that's Jerry's pocket move.
Maybe.
I don't know.
He's any flexing other, hard, okay? He's an Omega.
Any other thoughts or questions? This was a great week of comics. Where, yeah. You know, week and a half, really.
No, I think I've said everything I need to say. I just, like, really want to reiterate that these two specific issues I found really interesting and compelling, and I was excited to read them for a second time, and they just felt meaty and beautifully drawn, and I really enjoyed them in a way that I don't it's not that I don't always like the comics, but I don't always feel like fully satisfied by a comic,
yeah,
and I
these
feel like
both felt
both
like
of
big
these
stories.
Were really really satisfying.
Well, you think about it, X-Men 6 potentially the end of an arc mm-hmm. in setting up the threats in X-Men, and then Marauders 27 the end of that, and that was a big issue in terms of page count too.
Yeah,
that just had a lot going into it.
They were both fantastic issues. What about you? Thoughts, feelings, wrapping them up?
I really liked it. Yeah, I really liked both of these issues. I feel like this is Jerry at his peak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is me excited about what's to come, and not to peak and saying that it can't go any higher, can't, you know, plateau.
He's climbing
a bit.
That mountain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If we're going, he's on the chair lift all the way up to the summit.
Snowboard inside baseball. I'm actually really excited that we're getting Devil's Reign from Jerry next week, and then we'll still be getting some other things. I think we're getting another X-Men issue very quickly.
Ooh,
the
exciting.
Next week or two, yeah.
Cool.
So next week's issues, we're doing a combo move. We're kicking off our next event, our first week of Wolverine.
Ooh, baby.
So X Lives of Wolverine comes at you next Wednesday.
So if you haven't listened to our Ben Percy interview,
check
now's
that out.
The time.
Yeah. Well, I'll be posting, I think I have at least one idea for a video clip to share with that leading into the new event. But also, you want to talk about events, we've got two tie-ins. So I've mentioned the first one is the Devil's Reign X-Men issue number one, but then we also have the X-Men tie-in to the death of Doctor Strange.
Oh.
X-Men and Black Knight.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I feel like those are the big call-outs for next week. I'm going to pick up Strange Academy because that's what I do.
That's what you do.
I just read more and more comics.
All right, well, before we wrap this issue up, I just want to take a moment to say thank you for being such a wonderful supporter of our show, and just remind you that if you haven't already become a subscriber to our Patreon, you can do that for just $3 a month, and we post at least one little nugget of extra, whether it's behind the scenes, a little mini-sode, a episode that's supposed to be a mini-sode that is long, a video.
That's happened before, yeah.
Anything like that for just $3 a month really helps us continue to grow, and I just want to say,
check out that shirt.
Okay, we talked about it. Justin said Emma was right, and I did it, okay? I made an Emma was right shirt.
People love it.
It is up on our TeePublic page. So many of you wonderful humans or mutants just beings have gone out and purchased one of those, and you can get the design on anything, which is the glory of TeePublic. You could get it on a magnet, a shirt, a bag.
We got cups. We got jackets. We got bags. We got books.
You can get it on a notebook, whatever you want. But Emma's right design is up and available on TeePublic. So check that out. And again, thank you so, so much for listening, for supporting, for following us, and for just being a great community that we love and cherish so dearly.
Cherish.
I mean, we're on vacation right now, and we're both pumped to be recording an episode.
This
so.
Was a lot of fun.
Well, until next time, old friend.
Charles on the road.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ex-Wife Podcast. Be sure to leave us a review and tell your friends.
The Ex-Wife Podcast is produced in Providence, Rhode Island by Alicia and Justin. Our music is by Quan.